punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark. Hello, Monday. Here we are. Man, it's a whole lot different Monday than last Monday. I can tell you that much. Welcome to the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. Happy Cap Hour, all hour today. I'll have a little bit more on them and some district meetings coming up here shortly. Got a great show for you today. Dr. Jordan Bell from Texas A&M AgriLife Research and Extension Center in Amarillo, Texas, is going to be on here in the next segment. The whole show is really going to be with her today to talk about dry land and irrigated sorghums. She's very good at what she does, and I'm excited to have her on today. And first of all, let's check out some weather. It's cold. I mean, there's sleet, ice, everything going on east of here. From what I understand, it's going to be happening in our area sooner and later tonight or tomorrow or Wednesday. Depends on which weather person you listen to. Currently, the coldest spot in the state is Boise City up in Panhandle at 6 degrees, 12 degrees at Slap Out, 15 at Woodward, 19 at Lahoma, 20 at Butler, 19 at Hollis, and 20 at Altus. Let's check out some wind chills real quick if you want to. We got wind speeds. Wind's kind of dying down up north, but still here in central western Oklahoma and southwestern Oklahoma, we have wind 11, 12 miles an hour with wind gusts up to 20, and that's not the deal I wanted. So I don't even know where my wind chill went to. Anyway, I can't get it up. I'm sorry. But we are under a winter storm weather advisory here in southwestern Oklahoma and up as close to Arnett and up in that area towards Fairview and stuff right now. Northwestern Oklahoma, very northwestern Panhandle, it's not looking too bad for that. So hopefully we don't need this ice. I think these thunder sleets are going on, but anyway, we're breaking ice, that's for sure. I had to break ice yesterday, and I'm sure all the rest of you have had to too. How about those ball games yesterday? I hope everybody's favorite team won. I know I was 2 for 2 on my teams, and first time I ever seen a referee get the most valuable player in a game. That's pretty cool. Anyway, we'll move on. I'm going to check out, since we got a lot going on, I'm going to go ahead and just update you on what the grains are currently right now and skip what happened last night. Corn for March, 684. It's up 1 today. May, 682. July, 667. Soybeans for March, 1532. May is 1527. July is 1517. Soybean meal for March, 485.90. May is 470.20. And July is 458.50. Soybean oil for March, 6132. May is 6155. July is 6147. Hard red winter wheat, March, 876. It's up almost 8 today. May is up over 8, and it's at 871. Looking good. Oats is getting closer to that $4 range. March is 395, and May is 387. Cotton for March is down today at 86 cents a pound. For March, that is. And May is 87 cents a pound. Live cattle for February, 158.47. April's 163.17. June is 159.55. August live cattle, 159.07. Feeder cattle for March, 184.37. April, 188.55. And lean hogs for February, 75.15. April, 86.67. And May is 94.92. Anyway, congratulations to the Hudson Angus Farms. They had a great sale from my understanding out there Saturday. Great average, great turnout. And so anyway, congratulations on them for a good bull sale. All right, today is the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association Happy Cap Hour. Whether you got 10 head or 10,000 head, cow-calf stockers or feeders, selling at the sale barn, retaining ownership, or marketing retail, the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association has something for everyone. As cattle producers, we all have many of the same goals in mind: profitability, stewardship, feeding the world with integrity, and protecting our resources and livelihood for generations to come. To become a member or to learn about ways to get more involved, go to okcattlemen.org. They got some district meetings coming up. I'm going to name them off here real quick. February 6th, and that's coming up really quick next week. Southeast District is February 2nd or 6th at McAllister. February 7th at Comanche County Fairgrounds in Lawton. That's for the Southwest District. February 9th, the Northwest District is at Woodward at the Woodward County Fairgrounds. The 13th, the Northeast District at Mays County Fairgrounds in Pryor. The North Central District is at Payne County Expo Center in Stillwater. And February 23rd is the Murray County, at the Murray County Fairgrounds in Sulphur will be the South Central District. RSVP, please, at okcattlemen.org. Or call 405-235-4391. And what to expect: every meeting has a steak dinner. Imagine that. Anyway, they're going to be talking about legislation issues, update, sponsor presentations, Oklahoma Beef Council update, election for OCA nomination committee. Got lots of things going on. All the meetings will start at 6 o'clock. 6 p.m. vendor and sponsor visitation, and the meeting start at 6:30 with a steak dinner. So if you got any questions, give Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association a call or an email and figure all that out for you. Also coming up, Four County Alfalfa Meeting. If you grow alfalfa in western Oklahoma, you need to attend this meeting. Tuesday, February 7th. That's next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. right here, not too far from the station, the Western Technology Center, 30 Western Drive here in Elk City. Meal provided by Farm Credit of Elk City. Please RSVP a spot by calling Beckham County OSU Extension Office at 580-928-2139. Or you can email Greg at Hartman at greg.hartman@okstate.edu. Greg Hartman, Larry Breyer, Dan Cook, Christy Spaulding, Washtenaw County, Roger Mills, Custer, and Beckham County. Program will include speakers from, they just got all kinds of speakers here. Fertilization, insects, disease, weeds, livestock, economics and marketing, grower industry concerns and update. They got it going on. So anyway, I'm sure you can get a hold of any of your extension office agents in those four counties, Beckham, Custer, and Roger Mills and Washtenaw County, and they will get you hooked up. Let's see. I got some weather I wanted to go over with you guys here real quick. Okay, this is happening in our ag belt, which that's what I call it, central United States, where most of the agriculture is. The weather maps are lit up this morning as winter weather is affecting much of the central U.S. Wind chill warnings and advisories have been issued for much of northern Midwest, while winter weather is hitting the southern plains. In North Dakota and parts of northern South Dakota, a wind chill warning has been issued as values were expected to drop as low as minus 40 degrees this morning. These cold wind chills could cause frostbite on exposed skin as little as 10 minutes. In the Oklahoma and Texas panhandle, meanwhile, wind chills are as low as 14 below. And our forecast for this morning, a wind chill advisory will remain in effect this morning. It probably just went out, but I'm sure it's still cold. Winter storm warnings are in effect for northern and eastern Texas this morning in Oklahoma. Winter weather advisory will be in effect till noon Wednesday. Mix of sleet and snow is expected in parts of Oklahoma and North Texas today, along with wind chills below zero. Plan on slippery conditions. How about that? Anyway, I seen a deal this morning for come on the show in Utah. I don't remember the town or the city. Utah set a record this morning for the state, but it came in second overall as the coldest temperature ever recorded in the United States. The first one was recorded back in Montana way back when, but this morning it was -65.9 degrees, and that's without no wind chill. Get some of that. Anyway, so I hope everybody's I know cabin season is in full swing right now. Hope everybody has good luck. Keep a good eye on your cattle. Keep your eyes broke. And my rant of the week, I'm telling you guys, we're not doing a very good job this year. We need to, as stewards of the land, as ranchers and farmers, we need to do a better job with our net wrap. It is terrible what I'm seeing right now. I've seen two big plops of it on top of the bridge going over I-40 there by Merritt School the other day. I've stopped and picked up quite a few of them myself, but if I had to stop and pick them all up, I wouldn't get nothing done. So please secure your wrap. There's all kinds of ways. On Facebook this afternoon, I'm going to post a TikTok made from a gentleman down at Granite that he got behind his on his feed truck, a piece of 8-inch PVC with caps on it, stuffs it in there, and then takes something, pokes it out when he gets wherever he's going. It's real easy to do, but I'll post that on Facebook. But please, guys, let's do a better job of securing our net wrap. Look, it's cost us all money because we're taxpayers, and the highway department and county's got to fix all their bearings and stuff from it getting wrapped around wheels and mowers and stuff like that. So I'm trying to be nice about it today, but let's do a better job. When I come back to the Oklahoma Cattlemen Association Happy Cap Hour, Dr. Jordan Bell from Texas A&M will be on here. Be right back.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
We had commercial cattle, and as a commercial producer, you're always looking for a place to buy bulls that are going to work well for your program. And as we struggled to do that, we decided to raise our own. And so we started producing the traits that we were looking for to buy in bulls. Lori White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. On Facebook, follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Our company is called Flow Fuel. We deliver fuel to farmers and ranchers around western Oklahoma. The typical gas station is like a 35 micron filter. We run 10 micron filters in all of our stuff. So when we load our bobtail and all that, we filter it through a 10 micron filter. I'm pretty prideful, and the last thing I want to do is hear that someone got water or dirt in their diesel and they had problems and burnt their motor up or something like that. That's the last thing I want to happen.
So how does your more stringent filtering, how does it help your customers save money?
Filters aren't cheap. Let's say over 3 years you change one filter, or in 3 years you change 10 filters. You know, I'm all about saving each penny because that's all the pennies add up. That's where your profit is.
My name is Jamie Washburn.
My name is Daniel Bennett. Our company is called Flow Fuel. Call 339-8111.
Call 339-8111.
Mickey will go to bat for you. Anytime you've got a problem or, you know, a question, he's Johnny on the spot. If he doesn't know, he calls up higher to get it figured out. And we've got tractors insured, balers, combines, swathers, cattle, hay, home, anything you can think of, he's got it. And he's been called a few times. Mickey is really good about coming to see what you need. You know, he'll come to where you are to get your signature or go over something that he's run into a problem. You know, you can't beat that because we live 18 miles from his office. So it helps when he's willing to come to the house. He's done, you know, just whatever he needs to do, he'll be there.
I'm Jill Duresha, and I'm a farmer and rancher in southwest Oklahoma.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
The Quartermaster Creek Spring Bull Sale is happening February 22nd at 12:30 at the ranch near Leedy, selling 152-year-old bulls. Sires include Deer Valley Growth Fund, Monin Dakota 2528, and Baldridge Alternatives E125. Several other sires represented. Also selling commercial females carrying GC genetics. The Quartermaster Creek Spring Bull Sale happening Wednesday, February 22nd at 12:30 at Quartermaster Creek Ranch southwest of Leedy. You can also view the sale and bid online. For videos and sale information, log on to quartermastercreek.com.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Welcome back to the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. Happy Cap Hour today. Every Monday, as always. Man, we got some really funny guys out there in the ag world today. I was talking about picking up your hay wrap, quit losing it on the side of the road. One guy says, what did he hear? I'll just repeat what he said here real quick. Hang on. He texted in, and what did he say? He said, net wrap is a county hands leak stopper. So, anyways, that may be true in some counties. Anyway, currently it is here at the Gabe Gadsden Mesonet Center in the studio, 18.5 degrees, and the humidity 67, and the winds are out of the northeast at 9 miles an hour. Okay, on the show with me today is Dr. Jordan Bell. She's a professor and agronomist at the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences at the Texas A&M AgriLife Research and Extension Center in Amarillo. Dr. Bell, thank you so much for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I've been, you know, I got introduced to you from one of the ladies that works out there here, 3 weeks ago when we made this arrangement to come on the show. And I've been watching some of your YouTube videos, and I bragged on you all ago when we got you on the phone that you're really good, and you can tell you really love what you're doing.
Thanks so much. Well, I do. I love the Southern Great Plains and this area where I work and work with, I believe, the greatest producers in the world. And as you know, I mean, producers have to be really forward-thinking and aware of their environment down here. So it's a great place to work, and there's great people to work with.
Western Oklahoma, the Texas Panhandle, and the Oklahoma Panhandle, you've been around and you've seen it. We have some crazy farm ground, don't we?
We do, yes. Tough conditions, dry conditions. Some places, you know, soils are a little rough, especially for crop production, but it's amazing what producers can do.
Oh yeah, it's very amazing. Well, we're going to be talking about sorghum today, and let's start out with dryland sorghum, if you don't mind, and because I want to I want to hit a pretty hard on irrigated, but I want to start out with dryland and why sorghum, why dryland sorghum? Is it? I mean, Mother Nature, you know, we have to bet on her no matter what we're doing
right.
In farming. The sorghum in the Texas Panhandle in Western Oklahoma, what's your thoughts?
Well, I love sorghum for this region, and primarily because sorghum really is a tough crop. And I think where so many producers become a little gun-shy of sorghum is just from what they have seen with regards to pest management. And sorghum has this reputation of being a no-input crop, but like any crop, you don't put any inputs and any effort into it, you're not going to get the production you hope. So just because sorghum's a tough crop doesn't mean it's a no-input crop, but with just a little bit of care and some management, it's amazing the yield potential with sorghum and how sorghum can really be placed on these tough acres and do well. Now, with sorghum, of course, like any crop, just because we don't have any water doesn't mean it's not going to do anything. I mean, you know, some timely rain and some soil management goes a long way for sure.
Okay. You talk about soil management. Help us out here. What's your version of soil management?
Right. So, you know, when we look at planting sorghum in a dry land acre, we really see that if we are going into conservation tillage with any crop, it doesn't matter if we're talking about sorghum or cotton, you know, something to protect the soil, having some residue out there, minimize those evaporative losses from the soil surface, minimize erosional losses, you know, just really thinking about our planting surface and maintaining that soil moisture is critical to the establishment of any crop. So when we think about planting dryland sorghum, we really do want to make sure that we have a good seed bed and, you know, we have some residue if possible. And, of course, coming out of a drought, especially several years of a drought, we're starting to see dryland fields that no longer have residue, and I really hope that conditions turn so producers are able to get some residue out there and prevent these fields from blowing. But residue is important.
Yes, it's very important. And, you know, no-till, I think, is picking up a little steam. I mean, I no-till, but I know no-till is picking up a lot of steam, and I think that's really helping. But just as you just got through saying, you know, when you're in a drought and nothing's growing, you don't have anything really to leave for cover.
Exactly. And, of course, past couple of years, as we have looked at rising herbicide costs, as well as issues with herbicide availability, many people have turned back to steel just to control weeds. And we know in a dryland environment that a drought-stressed weed is hard to control. If that weed is drought-stressed, it's not going to metabolize that herbicide. You're not going to get the kill. And so that's a big investment. And so your ROI is not often there in a dryland environment like you might have in an irrigated system. So people are plowing more in dry land, so it just really makes it tough. But when we think about plowing, you know, there are conservation practices, you know, a broad sweep plow, you know, something to maintain some residue and just cut those weeds at the surface. And even having that biomass can really help. You know, we're not talking about getting in there with an old, you know, disc or something to, you know, really turn everything and lose all that moisture and residue.
Right. Well, they, I'm not bringing up the political part of this. I'm trying to say that, so climate change, I'm not going to say global warming, but climate change, climate does change. And I'm getting ready to turn 61 years old here coming up in just a few days. And the climate has changed, and, you know, it's not as wet as it used to be around here 30 years ago, and we don't get near as much snow, but we do at times and stuff like this. Is it getting too warm out here for sorghum?
No. Now, sorghum is a heat-tolerant crop. But now, when we talk about people who are saying it's too hot for sorghum, really what I think they're considering is heat during pollination or when that plant's flowering. And so sorghum is sensitive to heat during that pollination and flowering window. And, of course, when we look at the yield potential of a crop, it doesn't matter how good early season conditions were. If we have extreme heat and drought and blasting during that pollination window, we've just lost our yield potential. So I think especially as we get into the lower elevation areas of eastern Texas Panhandle and western Oklahoma, that's where producers really have to start thinking about their planting date. Sorghum does have a pretty broad planting window. You know, we usually can go from May into, at least in the Texas Panhandle, mid to even late June, depending on the maturity class of the hybrid. But because y'all do have a much higher heat index, you get down to those low elevations, and holy moly, it's hot down there. So it's really important that you consider what is the maturity of the hybrid and when is that hot period going to hit. You know, there's the possibility we could plant in early May and plant a fast sorghum that could be in and out, you know, within, you know, a 60-day window, and maybe you've missed that heat in July. Or, you know, let's look at conditions and maybe plant into June so that now we can possibly push that flowering later into the summer, maybe when it's not so hot as well. So, you know, it's just important to think about as you are managing the hybrid you have picked, think about when the pollination window is going to be. And if you visit with your seedsman, ask them about the half bloom date. That's when 50% of the field should be pollinating. And of course, sorghum's one of those crops, well, any crop, it can speed up under hot, dry conditions, or it can just put on the brakes. And so, you know, ask them, what type of hybrid is this? Is it going to slow down? Is it going to speed up? How should you manage your planting window around the hybrid you're picking? Or if you already have your window in mind, you know, pick a hybrid that's going to work in that. You know, it's not just going out and looking at a hybrid trial and going for the highest yielding hybrid. You know, first and foremost, we want high yielding, but you could have a high yielding hybrid that doesn't work on your acreage. And so that's not going to be a good scenario.
So most of your sorghums are what, 60 days for the most part? Is that the rule of thumb?
Well, I'd say, you know, probably in this region, what we're looking at for like a medium maturing, yes. About 60. Now, there are the longer ones, you know, 75. There's some fast ones that are like 45 days. And so, you know, that's always an option. But a fast hybrid also doesn't give you a lot of flexibility to compensate for bad conditions. It's like a early cotton variety. You know, it's going to, you know, race to the end. Whereas if you have something that's a little longer, is a little less indeterminate, you know, it can put on the brakes, it can compensate with, you know, later positions. And sorghum does the same thing. Sorghum's a tillering plant. And a lot of people hate the tillering in sorghum because those tillers can be suckers. You know, they can use those resources, but they also have the ability to put on secondary heads and, you know, can give you a little extra yield boost if conditions are favorable later in the season. So, you know, it's with every situation, it really becomes doing your homework and really thinking about what hybrid is going to work on your acreage with your planting window, your rotation, you know, everything that goes into the program.
Well, one last question on dry land. What is some of the yields out in the Texas Panhandle you've been seeing with sorghum on dry land?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, you know, it really variable. I think like any
I threw that one at you, didn't I?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at dry land, there's risk in dry land. So it would be dishonest to say that there are not years where there are dry land fields that have a yield of zero. But, you know, we have dry land fields that can yield, you know, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 pounds, which is phenomenal. And so it really just goes to show the potential for sorghum on a dry land acre. But those people who are making those higher yields on dry land, they're also doing their homework. They're picking their hybrids. They're managing their herbicides. They are paying attention to fertility. And that's something when we start looking at dry land crop production, people put on the brakes a little bit. You know, I don't want to sink money into expensive fertilizer if I'm not going to make the yield. But if you have the potential, you know, a little fertilizer can go a long way on dry land acreage. And it's not just nitrogen. You know, what about phosphorus? What about some of these other nutrients that can be limiting? Now, one of the things that we have to point out with sorghum is sorghum also is not very tolerant to high pH soils. So now you get into western Oklahoma in your area, that's not a problem. But you get up into the northeastern Texas Panhandle, like Lipscomb County, or even parts of the Oklahoma Panhandle, there's some soils up there that have a pH that can approach 8.5. And sorghum can run into some issues there. So that's where you have to start thinking about, well, maybe some iron sulfate, or what are some other options for a fertility program on that type of acreage as well. So it is important to think about, you know, if we are shooting for a high-yielding dryland sorghum crop, what inputs might we need?
Yeah, and like I said, out here in western Oklahoma, the pH is, high pH is not a big issue, but there is some land, especially along the rivers where they got water pushing salt up and stuff like that and getting into some high pH. Because I got a feel that it's registered 8 on the Richter scale, so I'm not very happy with it right now. So we're going to take a break, Dr. Bell, and when we come back to the Oklahoma Cattlemen Association Happy Cap Hour, we're going to start talking about some irrigated sorghum. How about that?
Fantastic.
All right, we'll be right back after this.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
America's beef producers have the best product in the world. From a backyard barbecue to a gourmet dinner at a four-star restaurant, if American beef is on the menu, you're in for some good eating. Our local beef producers raise a great product. As a financial institution, we're proud to be a part of it. Stop by and see us. Let's talk. First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre. Together we grow. Online at fnbec.bank.
Simon's Catch Restaurant, offering the elegant beauty of the country with the delicious food of Elk City's finest restaurant. Simon's Catch offers a superb menu, including all-you-can-eat farm-fresh catfish, family recipe shrimp, and USDA choice steaks. Get out of the kitchen and get into Simon's Catch Restaurant. From I-40, exit 34, go 1.5 miles south and 1.5 miles west. Open Wednesday through Saturday at 5 and Sunday at noon. Simon's Catch, for the best catch.
You can buy parts anywhere, but the people at our store are different than people at other stores. And if they're not, we're going to make them different. They should be more knowledgeable. They should be more friendly. They should be more customer-oriented. They should be part of the community. And that's what we want. We pride ourselves of doing business with people. You can buy parts anywhere. It's the people that make the difference. Napa Auto Parts, 716 West 3rd, Elk City, Oklahoma. Napa know-how.
Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyards weekly cattle sale. It's located on Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
From pump to pivot, Valley Water Experts can provide efficient turnkey pumping solutions for large or small operations. From identifying a source to remote management, Valley Water Experts have you covered with the most efficient and cost-effective solutions for all your water management challenges. Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com. That's Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
Good afternoon, great stewards of the land. This is Drew Cobb with your Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, January 20th. 1,592 head were sold. 6 head of steers at 389 brought 250. 7 at 489 brought 203. 3 at 575 brought 182. 15 at 642 brought 185. 11 at 732 brought 174. 8 at 751 brought 177.50. 6 at 858 brought 171.50. 5 head of heifers at 434 brought 179. 6 at 488 brought 192. 3 at 525 brought 170. 10 at 550 brought 171. 11 at 620 brought 172.50. 5 at 734 brought 164. Butcher cows were 5 to 88. Butcher bulls brought 75 to 114. Bred cows were 650 to 1825. Pairs brought 1325 to 2175. Elk City Livestock Auction, 3202 South Highway 6, Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. to consign. Call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Welcome back. Here's your forecast for northwestern Oklahoma and the northeastern Texas Panhandle. And I'm using Slap Out Oklahoma today. Currently, it's 13 degrees. Wind chill is at 2 above. Winds are out of the northeast at 8 miles an hour with wind gusts up to 13 today, 18 for a high, 8 for a low tonight, 26 tomorrow, 46 Wednesday, 51 Thursday. Get out the fishing poles and golf clubs because Friday it's going to be 58 degrees and nicely warm. Well, back on the air with me right now and welcome back Dr. Jordan Bell. She is a doctor, professor at Texas A&M AgriLife Research and Extension Center in Amarillo, Oklahoma. And thank you so much for being on today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Okay, so we covered dry land. Let's talk about irrigated. Let's just start right off the bat. I was watching one of your YouTube videos prior to the show starting, and it kind of covered what we were just going to get ready to talk about. And I wish we had 2 hours for the show today, but we don't. So to pre-water or not pre-water with irrigation before you plant?
So that's a tough decision, and I would say it's a field-by-field or producer-by-producer decision. You know, it really goes back to well capacity and what is, you know, depending on where the producer is in the panhandle, you know, there can be different allocations. You know, how much water can you pump? Are you sharing that water across other acreage? Because there's always a consequence to everything we do, and especially pre-irrigation. Pre-irrigation is one of the most inefficient irrigation events of the year. And often because, especially where we don't have residue, about 50% of that irrigation event can be lost just to evaporation. And so when we talk about high energy prices right now and the cost of every irrigation application, that's a lot of money that's just drying out, you know, blown away.
Yes.
And so we want to make sure that if we are pre-irrigating, we're protecting that investment. We want to make sure that we have the residue so that that field is not drying out. Second thing, when we talk about pre-irrigation, oftentimes we don't let that field dry down enough before we start field activities. And so if you're thinking about having to get in that field as quickly as possible, and wet fields are easily compacted. The wetter the soil, the greater the compaction, and the compaction with depth. And so when we think about how important it is for roots to be able to access that deeper moisture, if you have compaction, you're going to impact the rooting depth and the rooting activity of the plant. And it's not just the plant's ability to take up water, but also the plant's ability to take up nutrients. And so that can be a problem. Another thing that I have seen where guys have gone into a wet field too quickly to plant is that those furrow openers are going to pack those sidewalls. And if you're in an area where you have a little bit of clay soil, especially around the rivers and not, you know, on sandier ground, you can wind up with some serious sidewall compaction, and that impacts rooting activity. So it's always important to, you know, think about minimizing the evaporation. What's the pre-irrigation going to do to the drawdown? Because wells aren't static. And we know that when we start putting a lot of pressure on earlier in the season, we are impacting the availability of water later in the season. And so if you're starting to suck air in August because, you know, you've really pulled that well hard in April and May, well, that could be counterproductive. So, you know, there's always these decisions that we have to think about up front. Now, when we think about pre-irrigation, though, we know the value of pre-irrigation. It's that savings account. We want to get some stored soil water so that when it's hot in July and August, there's some moisture for those plants to grab and some soil water if we don't have the well capacity to meet that crop water demand. Right. But if you're in sandy soil, well, are you pushing water outside that root zone anyway? Are you, you know, losing water, pumping water that you're not going to be able to recover by plant water uptake? So, you know, what's the soil texture? That's always a really important thing to think about in advance, because you don't want to pay to pump water twice.
No, you don't. And it's you want to save it for when it really needs it. So when you're doing irrigated sorghum, what's the critical? When is it critical to make sure you have plenty of water for your plants? What's the time?
Well, so of course, ideally, if we're talking about a fully irrigated crop, I mean, sorghum, even though it's a heat and drought tolerant crop, it's not that it's not going to use water. If you have the water, it will use the water, and we'll see grain sorghum, you know, make 12,000-13,000 pounds. It can do it if it has the water. But we have to sit back and look at, you know, the real world. And so usually sorghum's going to be somewhere where it's deficit irrigated. Maybe you're sharing that water with an irrigated cotton crop. And so it becomes, let's think about those critical stages. When are we going to get the greatest bang for our buck? And, of course, first and foremost, like any crop, you want to make sure you get that crop up. So, you know, if I visit with producers and I say, I only have 4 inches of irrigation I'm going to put on a sorghum crop, you know, I'm going to put 1 inch on when I get that, you know, planted, and hope, you know, assuming I'm not going to have crusting issues, you know, get that crop up and have a uniform stand. And then another critical stage is actually what we call growing point differentiation. This is actually when you are determining how many seeds you're going to have on that head, that panicle. And so that's actually pretty early. That's about 8 to 10 leaves. And that's when that all the cell division's going on. And then if you were to go cut a plant down and do a cross-section, that's when you would barely see that little bitty head kind of popping above the soil surface. So it's like in wheat. We talk about, you know, pull-off days for cattle and on grazing wheat, especially if we have dual purpose. We talk about first hollow stem. That's because that growing point's moving above the soil surface. This is the same time, but in sorghum. You know, it's when that head's coming above the soil surface. So that's another really critical stage because we want to make sure we maximize the number of seeds per head. Often I visit with producers who they ignore sorghum all the way till they get to boot and flowering. And then they're like, well, I just have these little bitty heads out there. Well, yeah, boot and flowering are really important for pollination and setting the seed. But first, you have to make that seed. So, you know, around 8 to 10 leaf, and it's, you know, 8 to 10 leaf, we're talking about, you know, boot high sorghum. It's not like it's big,
right,
but it's still important. So then that boot to pollination window, you know, an inch or two in there, you know, make sure you have some water, make sure it's not stressed out. And then even later in the season during that grain fill period, it's really important. And it's important because we want to make sure, of course, we optimize seed size, but also plant health is really important later in the season too. If you have a field where sorghum's starting to dry down and that plant has to make a decision, you know, what it's going to do. So it will start to cannibalize its stalk, you know, so that it can fill that grain. Well, everybody's seen a sorghum field go down. They're like, I'm not planting sorghum because it's going to fall. Well, it fell for a reason. And a lot of times it's because it just simply ran out of water. And so an inch later in the season during that grain fill window is pretty important to maximize test weight, but also make sure that field doesn't go down. And especially sandy soils, you know, that can dry out real fast. That's an important consideration.
Yeah, that water can disappear out of that sand faster than you can put it in there.
Right.
So anyway, Dr. Bell, let's take one more quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about finishing the crop up. And I want to ask you a question that I seen on one of your videos called, you were talking about lazy roots, lazy plants.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So we'll take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. First had last Tuesday, January 24th. We sold 175, had a light run of cows and bulls, but extremely good market with our cows and bulls, $10 to $17 a hundred higher. Thursday, January 26th, we had a lighter run of kids and feeders, selling 779 for a total of 954 cattle for the week. Tuesday, better killing cows bring 92 to 101, 10 cows bring 74 to 83, with the bulls bringing 85 to 112. 2 to 3 year old bred cows, 1400 to 1575. 100 steer cattle, 14 steers weighing 342, bring 245, 4 to 450, 239 to 244. 5 to 550, 205 to 219, 6 to 650, 177 to 182. 7 to 750 steers, 165 to 182. 8 to 850, 172 to 184. 62 steers, 1 bunch weighing 861, bring 175. 8 steers weighing 902, bring 165. Other heifers, 3 to 350 heifers, 189 to $2. 4 to 450, 175 to $2. 550 to 6 weights, 165 to 174. 6 to 650, 167 to 175, with our 650 to 7 weight heifers, 162 to 166.50. Very good market this week with several feeder cattle set. They'll wait till next Thursday. For this Tuesday, January the 31st, we will have 40 bred cows. We also got 10 pairs. More by sale time. We'll see you this Tuesday, 8 a.m. sharp. Thanks, Kim and Jerry Nine, and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
The Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
This hour's weather brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Wouldn't it be great to partner with a feed company that knows all about the cattle industry? A company that owns and raises cattle themselves? A company that knows the blood, sweat, and tears you put into the operation every day. That company is Hobart Farm and Garden. They are your local high-pro feeds dealer providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Visit them online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Cattle have to eat. When grass runs short and you want to strengthen your herd, go with Hi-Pro. For Hi-Pro, go to Cowman's. Cowman's Feed and Ranch Supply in Erie specializes in bulk feed. It's always in stock and prices are good. And the way they take care of you is even better. If Gary Mills says he'll do it, it gets done every time. It's nice to know a place like Cowman's is around to help ag producers here at home. Cowman's Feed and Ranch Supply, 117 West 2nd in Erie. Call 526-3070.
They're built better. They're tough. It's heavier steel, rubber flooring. They're framed in differently. Their tires come 18 ply. You could drive through a mesquite patch. These things are just built to use out in the thick of things. If you're going to catch a cow out in the middle of a section, you're going to drag a huge trailer out there to her. Farmers and ranchers love Hughes trailers, and we've got them. Cattle King Manufacturing. We're 2 miles south of the golf course here at Elk City on Highway 6. On Facebook, just search Cattle King Manufacturing. 303-4246.
Once again, good afternoon, great stewards of the land. Drew Cobb in studio going over your Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, January 23rd. 1,647 head were sold. 4 head of steers at 381 brought 222. 6 at 562 brought 173. 40 at 684 brought 185.25. 56 at 883 brought 174.25. 61 at 919 brought 169.50. 40 at 959 brought 169.50. 60 at 988 brought 168.25. 6 head of heifers at 396 brought 200. 5 at 466 brought 175, 7 at 511 brought 176, 6 at 638 brought 162, 25 at 694 brought 155.50, 8 at 751 brought 168.50, 26 at 864 brought 164, butcher cows were 10 to 95, butcher bulls brought 51 to 108, bred cows were 1060 to 1350, Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, exit 71, Clinton, Oklahoma, sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To get signed, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Farmers and ranchers, listen up. It's time to make your life easier with the Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding and Repair in Visalia, Oklahoma. The Apache Hay Wagon hauls multiple bales of hay and helps reduce waste. Less waste means more money in your pocket. It'll pay for itself over time, plus make your life easier. What a deal. See all they have to offer at everettswelding.com. Again, that's everettswelding.com. And be sure to check out their ads inside the Penny News.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, here is your Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast. It is 21 currently at Mangum, Oklahoma. 9 is the wind chill. Winds out of the north at 12 with gusts up to 15. We are under a winter weather advisory until 12 o'clock Wednesday. Today, mostly cloudy, 24. Tomorrow, 50% chance of wintry mix and 27. Wednesday, chance of freezing rain, 37. Thursday, 30% chance of rain showers and 51. And Friday, sunny and 54. Okay, Dr. Jordan Bell with Texas AgriLife is on A&M. She's with Texas A&M AgriLife. How's that? Anyway, I got that straight finally. Is back on the deal with me. We've been talking about dry land sorghum, and now we're on to irrigate it. And I read an article from Texas A&M on sorghum on the irrigation part, and it said during irrigation during heading and flowering generally will produce an increase of 1,200 to 1,500 pounds of sorghum.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what research has shown, you know, looking at long-term research trials. But you also have to have that irrigation or the moisture and the conditions right early on when you're determining your yield potential.
Right.
So that's where, you know, I think about these water-limited environments and how most producers are managing sorghum now, it's definitely a deficit. And, you know, occasionally we'll see some producers who put sorghum on a shared pivot with cotton, and they just race that pivot across the sorghum as fast as they can to get back to that cotton.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, which, you know, can be a great strategy, but if you're speeding that pivot up and only putting on, you know, a third to a half an inch on that sorghum, and we're talking about these, you know, 105 plus degree days in the summer, you're losing most of that to evaporation. So the efficiency and effectiveness of that irrigation is just gone. But if you were to really think about, okay, rather than taking, you know, 7 half-inch irrigation events throughout the season or 8 half-inch irrigation events, as I'm speeding that over as fast as I can, you know, strategically think about, you know, I'm going to concentrate an inch on at different stages. You know, how could I really benefit the yield potential of that sorghum crop? And really that 8 to 10 leaf stage when that head is popping above the soil surface is really important just to determine the number of seeds per head.
Yeah, and in today's prices of sorghum, I mean, you have a chance if you get everything right, you do everything right and you babysit your crop, you got a chance to hit a home run with it.
You really do, and that's a really important consideration. When we look at input costs, and those are, you know, at the forefront of everyone's mind right now, sorghum is one of the cheapest seed sources out there. And so you can really cut back on that your overall input with sorghum seed versus some of our other crops that have really high seed costs. And then, of course, there's always the question, well, yeah, okay, but there's not herbicide options for sorghum. And there are not the herbicide options. But we're seeing more and more herbicide options. There's 2 herbicide-tolerant sorghums on the market now. iGrowth sorghum from Advanta, and they even have a forage sorghum hybrid that we've looked at this past year in our silage trial, and it really performed nicely. And it is tolerant to imazamox, which would give you broadleaf and grassy in-season weed control. And then S&WC, they have double team. And that gives you an option to spray for grassy weeds in season with that. So, you know, those are some considerations. Now, of course, with any new herbicide-tolerant product, there's going to be stewardship agreements and restrictions on crop rotations and things like that. But, you know, that gives you some flexibility. But even with that, there still are herbicides on the market that perform really well with sorghum. And so we've started using more Outlook. And Outlook, of course, is labeled for corn and, corn, yes, but cotton and sorghum. You don't have a lot of corn growers down there.
Right.
But, you know, that gives a guy a lot of flexibility. If you just want to come in and do, you know, broadcast across the whole field, you know, what are some options? Warrant, of course, our Matola cores. But, you know, there are some herbicide programs out there that give somebody some flexibility in managing weeds in sorghum. And really, just like with anything, pre-plant herbicides go so far. You know, it's when you don't get those pre-plants out and all of a sudden you're trying to clean up a train wreck in season, that's when it just becomes a mess.
Yes. When do you cut the water off? We got about 3 minutes left on the show, so when would we cut the water off?
like any agronomist, I want to say it depends. But
well, you could say that.
Yeah. No, but if we're thinking about, you know, really dry conditions and sandy soil, and we're really wanting to optimize our yield potential, you know, I'd like to see that water still going until we're in a milk stage. And that's just going to maintain plant health. That's really going to optimize test weight, optimize that yield potential. But realistically, you know, step back and, you know, what are many people going to do? And, you know, if you're shutting down a pivot, because you're cutting it off your cotton, you're probably going to cut it off the sorghum too. But, you know, if possible, if you could make sure you can probe that field, you know, and there's some decent moisture in there, hopefully you maintain that plant health and finish that crop off as well. Now, when we talk about irrigation, though, one of the things that I saw this past August, just because when we were able to get some nice rain across much of the eastern panhandle in August,
yes,
a lot of people have been irrigating early in the season, and they hadn't left much room in those profiles for rainfall. And so it's always important to, you know, think about, well, if we are going to be irrigating and we have that forecast, you know, that's a good time to shut it off so that we can utilize that precipitation as well.
Oh, yeah, because exactly. If you got it soaking wet and the water, because rainwater is so much better than irrigation water anyway, and you want to see it run off, or would you like to see it soak in?
Exactly. And, of course, the rain's going to do all those fields so much good. You know, push those salts out. And, yeah, just the ability to save some money and cut off that irrigation is such a benefit.
Well, Dr. Bell, I look forward to talking to you again one of these days on the show. You've been so informative, and the music's playing, and I got to quit talking. So, anyway, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks again.
All right, thank you. Have a great day. Hi, Dr. Jordan Bell with Texas A&M AgriLife. You guys have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.